Hey, Redline Radio listeners, you can find us every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
We're rolling?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay, because I have an important announcement. I don't want anyone to miss it. Football season's around the corner. It means it's time to be loading up on the Great Tasting List.
No. That's not what we're doing here. It's baseball season. We're talking baseball season. We're talking tailgates. We're talking Miller Lite. Miller Lite, Barstool Chicago, and the Chicago White Sox. We got ourselves a little shindig coming up, Ed. Why don't you tell the people about it?
Hell yeah, we do. Labor Day weekend, we are partnering with Miller Lite to have a tailgate at the White Sox game on September 3rd with our Barstool friends and family. And we're giving you a chance to join us. You can join us for the tailgate and the game. Just enter to win. It's very easy. Send us a pic/video of you having fun or the fun you've had this summer with Miller Lite. And the best pic or video gets a ticket. You must be 21 plus to enter. It's going to be great to hang with Miller, the official beer of the Chicago White Sox.
I do have one slight amendment to make to that. We are giving away four sets of tickets.
Who?
Four sets of two tickets to four different winners. So all you got to do is respond to this tweet from Barstool Chicago showing us all the fun you've had with Miller Lite. It could be at a lake house, at the North Ave Beach getting scuzzy at Castaways, sitting at a dive bar at a baseball game, wherever. Just send those videos in. Come join the tailgate. The tailgate is open to everybody. If you want to swing along, just swing along. The tickets that you could win are for the game. So swing by. It's going to be a lot of Miller Lite, a lot of food. It's going to be a great time. That's September 3rd. I don't know the time the game starts yet. I'm assuming it's a day game, but nevertheless, we'll be there in the parking lot as soon as it opens. So swing by and enjoy some Miller Lite.
Got to be 21 or older.
Yes. Of course.
MillerLite.com/redline. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. Pennant race.
It's pennant race.
Yeah.
I haven't missed a game in a while. I'm really dying here. My liver hates me, but that's okay. I had to will my team to victory, and I'm doing so with Miller Lite.
There you go.
Every time you drink a Miller Lite, look at me if you're watching this on YouTube. Every time you drink a Miller Lite, you support this show. Thank you.
You support the show, and an angel gets its wings.
Are we good on the announcements? Did we do a disclaimer? Celebrate responsibly, Milwaukee,
yep.
Wisconsin.
I got that. Yeah,
96 calories, 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. Just to reiterate what Chief had already said. And on that note,
good morning, good afternoon, good evening, Chicago sports fans. This is Barstool Carl
and White Sox Dave.
Chief
Eddie,
and this is Redline Radio and All Gas No Break Chicago Sports Podcast, brought to you by Barstool Sports Chicago and our good friends and our partners at Miller Lite. And, dude, it's very sad, Redline Radio, Ed, for
Why
me.
Why is that?
Because I've been waiting all year for, like, the spark and excitement that Dave Williams has right now. And it
Feels
sucks
good.
That we can't really embrace it or talk that much about the White Sox because they're canceled. Didn't you cancel them?
I didn't. I didn't cancel them.
It was a console.
It was a console, and I uncanceled them because I make the rules.
And this ball game is fucking over. That was a huge win right there. Johnny Cueto with a big old ball sack. I'm calling it right now. Tomorrow is a must-win game. I got Ace all upset right here. That's fine. I don't give a shit. That's a huge win. Huge win. Tomorrow's must-win, though. Cease versus Verlander. Two best pitchers in baseball, maybe. Two best pitchers in the AL for sure. Must-win baseball game. Let's make it five in a row. Let's steamroll these fucks and give us some hope. Uncanceled. We are uncanceled. We are uncanceled.
So
you don't.
I don't think you do. Are in charge of rules for canceling stuff.
Oh, I'm in charge of the rules. I want to see the rule book where it says I can't uncancel.
KFC is a holder to those, so
I'm gonna tweet at him right now.
He would know. Can I call KFC?
Let's call him.
I'm gonna call KFC.
Yeah, because I think once you're canceled, you're dead. And it's like you just can't, like, I don't even know if you're allowed to watch anymore.
And the difference between this guy and last week's guy and the week before and all those other week's guys, because of 2 1-run games, we got to get to this.
It is.
You can't on console.
Yo, what up, man?
Hey, you got a second here? We're live on Redline Radio. We want to talk about the console rules because White Sox Dave is unconsoled.
Yes. You know, I would love to because before you even ask me, can I just tell you, I got a text message this morning from Jay Hay, who is the former producer of Starting Nine and, friend of Rocket and Dallas and all those guys. He is best friends or was at the time in college with the dude who coined the term.
I've met him, by the way, that guy.
I think I went to high school with him.
You went to St. Charles North High School. That's how I met him.
Let's hear what he has to say.
Yeah, Sean, I think is his name. I feel like you once made a video with him or something saying, like, hello. I don't know. But, yeah, I think we all know. And so I got a text this morning. He says, I'm more bothered by White Sox Dave trying to uncancel than I should be.
Oh, that's because he's scared.
And I said, the fact that it's bothering me is both a testament to how stupid I am about this fucking shit, but also how sacred the console is. And he said, like, I'm thinking about a dumb phrase whose origins I was adjacent to, and the bastardization of that phrase is going through my mind more than anything at my real job. So we are very hot about this. And it hurts my heart, Dave, because you were a stand-up member of the console.
You're right, Kevin. You are right.
You always used it and pushed it, and I actually appreciated it because it kind of became a bit of a, you know, like a segment and a phrase for us and all that shit. And you were always using it and explaining it to people. And what I really hate to see is that you got burned, man. Sometimes you console too early, and I didn't console too early.
They lost 3-4 to the Kansas City fucking Royals in the heart of the easiest stretch of baseball year.
Okay, well, listen. All right, then listen. You tell me if you think that you still consoled at the right time. Then I mean, listen. We'll find out. If the Sox make a run and make the playoffs, you were wrong and you consoled. If they don't, you consoled correctly. That is simply how it goes. And I'm not saying that you have to root. Here's what I don't like. If you console and then your team makes a run, it's not like you have to root against them so that your console is correct. You can still root for the team. You just have to wear it and look like an asshole. And
I'm wearing it right now. That's fine.
When people say to you, aren't you the asshole who console decides? And you just be like, yeah, I was wrong. They proved me wrong. But you can't unconsole.
I feel like he should have to tweet about the White Sox the way Frank tweets about the Mets for the rest of the year.
Well, you know,
I have been anyways.
I guess we can have like a console council if you want. I can talk to some of the OGs. I don't know if it should be like, you know, Frank is an absolute enormous asshole. He's a fan. So I'm not gonna tell Dave that he has to become one of the worst fans in the world by actively rooting against his own team. But what I think you can even root in the moment when they win a game, you could be happy about it. But I don't think you can be out here being like,
Kevin,
I told you this team was magic. I told you.
No. I'm not there. I'm just riding a hot streak right now. I got a question for you.
You literally said unconsole. You can't do that.
My emotions were high. All right. They just beat the best team in the American League, maybe in all of baseball, twice in a row. Late inning magic. I'm falling victim to the moment. And I got a question for you.
Are you consoling your unconsole? Because then that's okay.
I'll have to think about that one. I don't want to go back on my word twice.
This is not your game. You don't think about anything. These are the rules. If you console your unconsole and admit that that's not allowed, then we can...
I have said I know it's not allowed. And the unconsole thing, that was just me firing off a tweet because I was... insanely fucking high. But my question is this, Kevin, I got a question. From what I know of you, you absolutely love the Mets, correct? Like it's high up on your I love this blank list.
Yeah, the most important thing in my life, you know, maybe my kids edge them out, I don't know.
Exactly, maybe. That's my point. And the White Sox should be a lot better than they have been this year, and they're finally playing like they kind of sort of should have all year. I'm riding the hot streak, and I'm sorry I canceled them. I don't know. I'm not sorry I uncanceled them because they are fucking back right now.
No, you can't, though. I'm sorry if I did or not. You can't. You did it. You said it was over. You called it.
How about this? Carl, I need a legal opinion from you. Can you sign a contract, verbal or otherwise, under the influence of drugs or alcohol?
It's a defense you can bring up if KFC is trying to enforce the contract.
That's what I'm doing right now because I made that.
But it is not an absolute. It's not an absolute defense.
I made that
Dave.
Console
it has to be considered in conjunction of other factors.
No.
If Kevin is the one who got you drunk, then you can use that. If you could say Kevin
Portnoy did.
Hold on. If you could say KFC bought you the booze and got you drunk, so then he put you in the console community, then that's a defense.
The word console was born out of a drunken stupor. If
yeah,
I'm not,
I mean, it's a statement from a dumb person. We're not talking about. You know, it's not rocket science here. It doesn't matter. I thought you were going to try to say you were overly emotional when you unconsoled, and so that's, you know, off the books. That if you want to write a blog or a tweet or do a speech, or I would recommend doing all three. When you console your unconsoled, I think that would be
that's his workload for the week.
Yeah, what do you think I am like? I don't got time for that.
I think you have to just wear this. Listen, in 2016, I consulted the Mets when they were – it was probably like maybe early August. They were very injured and not good, and they got very hot. They made the one-game playoff. We all know how that goes with Connor Gillespie. But everybody told me, you know, didn't you already consult? And I had to be like, fucking yeah. And I'll be honest, I was shaking in my boots. I was like, what if this is the year that the Mets somehow win a World Series and I'm the asshole – who bailed on them in August.
Hey.
And I'll be honest, Dave, if you got to, you know, who knows what happens with the White Sox? You could be known as the asshole who said this team stinks.
If they win the World Series.
Who saved the season.
I will fucking spin that spin zone into the ground.
No, you won't.
Yes,
no, you
I won't, fucking will. I'll start it right now. I haven't missed a game. I've been at that stadium every single fucking night.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You called it. You said this team is done. That's what the console is.
The entire fan base said that.
They're not making the playoffs. That's what the console is. That's what you said.
And that's not even it. It's not that I didn't think they were going to make the playoffs. I said this team is fucking done as like in basically on an organizational level. That's what I meant by
it.
No, one gets to just make up what the console means in their mind. It's when you mean you have no shot to contend this year and it's over. It doesn't mean that you have to stop watching games. It doesn't mean that you have to root against them. It just means that you went all in. You wrote it in ink. There's no backsies. There's no taking it back on your call. You called your shot and you said it was done.
All right. This is what I'm going to ask you to do. I'm going to ask you to craft a tweet saying what you want for me to get back in the console community's good graces. And
okay,
I will consider those.
Know that there's in no way will you be getting back to like, you can be the guy leading the charge for the White Sox winning because you have to at least, you're Tommy Smokes right now. Tommy said that the Yankees were done. Then he declared them that they're going to win the World Series. Now he's claiming he's right again for his original tweet. He's a, you know, flip-flopping asshole. And unfortunately for you, that's what this season's going to be for you.
I mean, I honestly don't think it's going to be their winning one-run games that they should not be winning right now. And that is completely unsustainable. But I'm riding the hot streak. Maybe they ride that hot streak into the playoffs. Good. I want to see playoff baseball for the third year in a row.
But that is totally fine, and that's probably what you should be saying. What I always say with the Mets is whether it's a console or a prediction or whatever, I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that I have egg on my face. I'm just usually more often than not, I'm right about these things. But you can't – there's no way that – you know, when you tweet like, oh, my God, the White Sox won again, and you get a million people in your mentions saying, too late, buddy, you already called it, you don't get to say but. You don't get to weasel your way out of that.
I'm not trying to weasel my way out of it. I know what I said. It's on the internet. It's written in ink. I understand all that.
Is voided. It's never a real thing in the first place.
Absolutely no problem being the asshole that said this team's cooked, this organization stinks. I have no problem being that asshole if they win out and make a run in October. I have zero problem wearing that because in the end, it's only the little loud assholes, the one or two or three or four or five guys in my mentions that are like, you cancel the team, you're a flip-flopper, you're a dog shit fan. I don't give a shit about those people. I give a shit about the people that are riding and dying with me, going to the stadium, spending $200 on a Tuesday night to will this team to victory, and that's what I'm doing right now.
Well, you know what the difference is, though, Dave? Those people you described, they didn't cancel the season.
That may be true. That's
true.
I counseled them, yes. I specifically used that verb. But the entire fan base thought this team was cooked prior to 5 days ago. So
put yourself on the ban list.
That's the game you play. It's a risky game we play. You're playing with fire when you counseled this early. You did it. I respect the people who call it and and put their dick out there when, you know, it's easy to call it when it's September 20th and you know already. But
I did it on like probably
I will craft a tweet. Listen, I'll craft a tweet. I'll talk to the council, We'll see exactly where you stand and what, you know, your Twitter rules, if you will be for the rest of the season. But just know that an uncounseled does not exist. You already called it. It's too late, and you will forever be the guy who maybe will find out bailed too early on the 2022 White Sox.
Okay. I hope I was the guy that bailed too early, like I said, but I just have one last question for you. Is that communist loser Ed on your council?
No. The council will be like the guys who fucking coined it. And said
okay. Rich, okay.
Nobody from here.
Okay. Deal. Okay. We got ourselves a deal.
Okay.
Okay. I'll get back to you guys shortly.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin.
Hang up the phone. Get him out of here. Get him out of here. Get him out of here.
Well, that's talking White Sox. What else you got?
That's talking Kunzel.
I mean, like I said, man, this is Ryan said it the best this morning. Like, I walked in all chipper and fresh as a daisy. That team affects my mood too much. It does. I fucking hate that it does, but it does. This entire summer I've been miserable because that team has made me miserable, and now they're playing. I shouldn't say they're playing well.
There you go.
I shouldn't say they're playing well because they're winning games they should not be winning, but they're winning them. It doesn't matter how you get that W in the end, if you get it, and it's fun right now, and I'm trying to bask in this little run of success they're having, three games against dog shit teams, and then two so far wins against what I think is the best team in the American League, maybe all of baseball. So I'm sorry that I ran my mouth. But I'm not going to take back the Uncounsel as it sits right now. If Kevin brings forth a compelling argument on why I should or why I should apologize or why I should, you know, make a video or any of that, then I will consider it. But as it stands right now on this show at 1:52 p.m. on Wednesday, August 17th, I'm not taking back the Uncounsel. This team's winning the fucking World Series.
When did you?
I'm joking.
When exactly did you Uncounsel?
Monday night after they won the
first game against
the first game against the Astros. Yeah.
Well, what I was curious, because
they looked like dog shit for eight of those innings. Just horrible at bat after horrible at bat. Johnny Cueto just a fucking master.
Another thing, I mean, David.
What?
We have to talk seriously
about what?
I want to give you an opportunity. I'm not going to be Kevin here and hold you to the fire just because you said something in the heat of passion, but, I mean, you will never start Johnny Cueto game one over at Dillon's.
Have you seen what Johnny Cueto has done this year against the Astros? Did you watch that game yesterday?
And that's your valid point, is that he's done it well against the Astros and against the Yankees?
I want you to read the tweet again because I didn't say I would. I said you could make an argument. I would start Cease over Johnny Cueto in a do-or-die game, whatever game that is, game seven, a wild card game, whatever. Game 163. But if the organization said, hey, look at Johnny Cueto. He's carved up the Houston Astros not once but twice, and he carved up the New York Yankees all while Dillon Cease. He did it again last night. He labored again. He only had 4 1/3 last night, I think.
Yep.
Gave up 3 runs. He was almost at 100 pitches.
A bomb to Altuve.
Like, he hasn't taken that. I mean, he's been incredible this year. He had a legitimately historic run. Giving up one earned run or less in 14 straight starts. That doesn't happen in Major League Baseball. Dillon Cease did it. But he hasn't done it against the best of the best yet. So that's the argument you could make. I'm not saying that I would
do
it.
Sure, let me read the tweet. This is good language from Dave. Ed, I think you're going to be impressed with, like, he kind of dances around this take a little bit in a way where, like, this all
holds
up. Usually
I don't do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Johnny Cueto has watermelon nuts.
He does. He has watermelon nuts.
What a great pitcher that dude is. As good as Cease has been this year, I think you could make an argument. Dave, that's a beautiful trio of vagueness. I think you could make an argument. You'd rather have Cueto in a do-or-die game.
I think that's a fair statement.
To generate a conversation.
Now, if you put a gun to my head and say, pick one for this do-or-die game, I'm going with Dillon Cease.
We don't need a gun. You would take Dillon Cease.
I would take Dillon Cease.
Yeah.
But, like I said, the rationale, if it was like, hey, look what he's done this year. He's been outstanding this year.
And against the Astros and the Yankees, too, right?
It's like 23 1/3 and 3 earned runs, but it's like weak contact. He's like, that guy.
Hey, good find. Rick Hahn.
fantastic fucking pluck, even though it took Lance Lynn tearing his meniscus to find him. That's fine. It doesn't matter how you found him, it works. But he has been so fucking fun to watch this year. He's the and the White Sox have good starting pitching. Giolito's had he struggled this year, but Cease is awesome. Mm-hmm. Lance Lynn hasn't been as great, but he's normalizing right now. Okay. They've been fine.
Can I make another argument?
Hold on one sec. Sorry. But if you watch Johnny Cueto pitch compared to those guys, like those power arms, he works fucking so fast. He gets the ball and throws it, and he knows exactly how he's handling each pitch of each at-bat, and it's very refreshing to watch. I love watching that dude pitch. He should be a fucking pitching coach one day.
Yep. Gamer, for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. They should pitch him in between those two guys, though.
I think that I will put this in stone. He is 100% the game two starter.
There you go.
100% the game two starter. What's that?
I said limit the table pounding because it'll.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
I know. I'm getting animated. But here's the thing. I'm not saying stop. It's just a little thing because I want to keep this going. I do want to pause for a second to share a word about who.
Revitalite.
Thank you, Ed.
Yes. Let's revitalize I needed some this morning, right now. Ed. You did.
I did.
Really? Well, I you went to the game. You went to the game,
last night. Going again tonight.
Really, it's going to be in a lot of Sox fans' pocket here, this stretch run. They're going to need some Revitalite.
We're going to need it.
There's going to be some long nights, and Revitalite is an advanced rehydration solution designed to replenish vital fluids and minerals. It's powered by the same electrolyte formula found in the baby aisle, but with an improved taste and texture more appealing to adults. Revital is conveniently sold next to the beer, wine, and liquor, so you can shop like an adult and hydrate responsibly. On our desk right here, if you're watching on YouTube, we have the Barstool Black Label. It's a berry frost flavor. Very nice. Everyone likes blue flavored drinks, right? It's always
classic.
Good stuff.
Yep.
A pro tip here, make sure you drink half at night, before. And then, or after everything, and then you do the other half in the morning for optimal results.
It's like it's a big bottle. Doing it in one sitting is possible, but that half and half trick is the way to do it.
Yep. So pick up your Revitalite Black Label today in store or online at the Barstool store and tweet us or tag Drink Revitalite, at Drink Revitalite, I should say, in your morning after stories. Go do it. Drink Revitalite.
And I like to always point this out. This is a 36-ounce bottle, I want to say. It's big. It's bigger than a bottle of the standard competitors, but it's only 70 calories for the whole bottle. It's not
people think it's loaded with sugar.
It's
and
not.
Salt. No,
not
it's
at
not.
All.
It's
yeah.
good stuff.
It's not. My other counterpoint to Johnny Cueto. Mm-hmm. Johnny Cueto has proven he could pitch very strong in a game one in Chicago before.
Yes.
He pitched game one against Lester.
It took Javi Baez.
Yep.
And Javi Baez thought he hit the ball 700 feet.
Yep.
One of the great basket home runs in Wrigley Field history. But
absolutely. He went 8 innings that game. Struck out 10, Dave, at Wrigley Field.
Dude.
October 17th.
Does that make you like him more, Dave?
2016.
I swear to God, when they signed him, because he got hit around a little bit because it was a minor league deal. So he had to, ramp up, didn't have spring training or anything. I just assumed he was going to be one of those pitchers or players that the White Sox love to sign that's over the hill, and they were going to be DFA-ing him by, May 15th. I just assumed that was going to happen because that's what always happens with them, and he has been just so, so refreshing to watch play baseball. Hopefully he doesn't get fucking White Sox bad juju all over him, and he carries this in, but it's getting to the point where, they have to bring him back next year.
They probably won't.
Probably not.
See, you guys do this to yourselves. Why do you guys do this to yourselves, Dave?
I know.
Give me a second here. Give yourself 60 days, all right? Maybe 65, maybe 75, and come back and then think about the pitching staff. Because White Sox fans love to get caught up in,
we do.
Where is this all going,
Fuck it. Why not? Look what Justin Verlander's doing.
I mean, this is completely different.
Yeah,
though.
But I'm just saying,
Johnny Cueto used to be a power pitcher.
What is he? I'll talk Justin Verlander, but what does he have to do?
Yeah, just because he's fucking old.
Everybody has that guy in their group of friends who comes in. They're like, she's different. You don't know, guys. I'm telling you, she's different. Like, mm-hmm. She's been on a date, man, two dates. Wait till you meet her. That's White Sox fans. They're always just thinking so far. It's like, dude, just have a nice cup of coffee.
We don't have that ability. We're stir crazy. We want fucking what was promised, and they haven't really given it, and that's why this 5-game stretch where they've been winning, I said this morning, bottle this feeling up and sell it, because White Sox fans are feeling good right now, even though there's a lot of smoke and mirrors behind these wins. Mm-hmm. And my summer revolves around the White Sox and all your year life. Round, but my life. But my summer revolves around the White Sox, and it's been a brutal summer watching them. And these, like, I just hope that they can keep this momentum going, and not even the momentum, like, build off of the wins, and then start playing the game that you should be playing. And I'm saying burying teams. Obviously, it's not going to happen every game, especially against a good team like the Astros. But, like, they've tried to beat themselves in these two games too. Like, Lurie Garcia dropping fucking cutoffs because he's inexplicably on a big league roster. Shit like that. Like, gifting the Astros runs. They just happen to win these games instead of lose them, which they have done all year.
If they go to the ALCS, will you get an Uncunsel tattoo?
Perhaps. Oh, nah, I'm not doing tattoos. I'm not doing tattoos. You could think of something else.
I think that's what it should be.
I don't do tattoos.
One thing worth noting for White Sox Dave's unconsoled video was that he said they're unconsoled and tomorrow's a must-win game. So I was just hoping that they would lose, because then you would have to go through an unconsole, and then what would happen?
And then reconsole?
Because must-win implies
it's not
what?
They're not consoled.
No, must-win implies if they lose, then what?
They're consoled.
So why would you unconsole them before a must-win game?
I wasn't thinking rationally, Tom, okay?
Just saying, those are two major.
I understand what you're saying, and I understand that everybody has said that. I didn't hear anyone else bring it up.
That's why I wanted to bring that up. I didn't hear it.
I was excited, okay?
That was just an interesting little twist into that.
You know how many comeback wins they've had this year where they in a games that they should not have won?
Nine.
None. None. That's the first time all year that I've, like, actually, like, my dog was freaking out because I was just, like, audibly getting into that, those last two innings, like, screaming at the TV and shit. I missed that feeling. So pardon me for flying off the handle a little bit.
In the dark.
Now, do you realize, though, you have set yourself up for a sharper fall because, you know, you guys are still tied or in third place.
Game back, yep.
You know, it's just 2 1-run games. Do you understand if they lose two games by one run?
That's how I've explained the smoke and mirrors. I'm fully aware. But, I mean, they're facing a lefty today. Granted, it's Framber Valdez, who I think is one of the most disgusting fucking pitchers in baseball. He's just dirty. I love watching him. It's like bowling ball fastball. They haven't even really hit lefties this year well, but you got Eloy back. I think Robert is playing tonight. I've heard. I don't know if that is correct or not, but rumor has it he will be in the lineup. Could be 3 in a row. And I would love them to just come out and just fucking beat them by 5 runs tonight. And it's getting to the point where I think, I was going into games expecting them to just look like dog shit for the last month or two and that they were never going to click. If they win this game big tonight, we're back. Okay? That's just how it goes. And I'm not talking about how they won the last two nights. Like, if they win, great. But if they play a clean game and just, like, bury Framber Valdez tonight, which is not outside the realm of possibility, we're back, baby.
Ed?
Frank Costanza style.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, until they have, like, just a implosion of base running errors,
yeah,
and then
yeah,
just
yeah.
do a bunch
and
of other dumb shit next week. Yeah,
you know, Tony La Russa. Yeah,
what do you think about that, dude? What do you think about that fan video?
I think it's super funny. The video is great. The guy went on the score. Did you see that?
Yeah, I didn't listen.
Holy hell, does that guy have an unbelievably overinflated sense of fucking importance?
Why? What
right
did he
now?
Say?
He was talking about how the team needed. Like him to win that game, and the interview's on the internet on Twitter. I'll tweet it out or whatever. But I flew in from, I think it was Florida. This is my first game all year, and I needed to make sure Tony knew that I knew what I was talking about, like shit like that.
Oh Jesus!
But I mean, Tony La Russa has Ethan Katz and Miguel Cairo and all these other guys within 2 feet of him. I promise you, one of them would have spoken up and been like, "Hey, Engle, go pinch run." And I'm sure there was just like a delay and the timing of the video where it looked like he was acknowledging the fan. That's what I would, at least that's what I hope happens.
Well, dude, there's a, at least one bad runner in every dugout who is aware of the other bad runners, who's willing to be like, yeah, get that, get a runner for him.
Yep.
Cause he's, he know, he's conscious.
But Eli's not even a bad runner.
No, I'm saying, I know. So take whoever it is in the White Sox dugout. Like, it could be Abreu. Whoever it is, there's somebody in like every fucking, just lost a match, bet on the Phillies. Oh, there's somebody in every single dugout who's such a bad runner that they have the perspective that when those two-out situations happen, they're like, yo, dude, get a runner, because they are, like, anxious about being in that situation. So they're looking out for other bad runners. So they're it's like, hey, Tony, get Angle. Somebody's doing that.
Exactly. So, like, that's why I don't buy that Tony did it because of the fan. So, but it was a funny video, and it just plays into the White Sox dumpster fire stigma. And I'm like, the more those kind of things happen, like Tony La Russa falling asleep in the dugout, even though he didn't, he was just like flickering his eyes a little bit. I hope he wasn't falling asleep in the
resting
dugout.
Resting his eyes. Yeah, that's what my dad used to say.
Yeah.
I'm just resting my eyes.
Those were not his seats either, from what I understand.
Oh, he came down. He climbed down.
Yeah.
You can still do that.
Yeah, to save the seats.
No, they don't give a shit. I moved up like basically behind the dugout yesterday. But yeah, like you got, I'm just starting to lean into all that funny stuff. Like, you guys are a bunch of fucking misfits on the island of misfit toys. And, like, I don't know. You might as well just fucking lean into it, because it's never going to change. It's, and at least until La Russa is gone. Who knows when that's going to be. But it's funny, you know? That's how I see it. People were, like, legit White Sox fans. And I understand their point in perspective, too. Like, there was a lot that were really fucking pissed about that video. Because they're like, what the fuck is this guy doing in the dugout? He's too old for this. He can't think anymore. I get that too. It ain't changing, so he might as well just roll with the punches. And that's all I got to say about that.
All right, good. Let's have a word from a sponsor.
Let's.
Which one? Dave, you pick.
I'll
You're
pick.
Feeling hot. Who gets a little touch of the White Sox Dave magic right now?
How about Skrill?
How about Dave.com?
Do that too.
You want to talk about Dave.com? I'll tell you everything you need
to
know.
Are you kidding me? We have an ad read for Dave.com.
We've had it before.
We do.
And Carl, I know you got, you know, your finances aren't in check at all.
Thanks, Dave.
But if you're living, since you are living paycheck to paycheck and struggling to make ends meet, I know that can be really stressful for when, you know, unexpected expenses come up for you and the family. So, but I, Dave, can help you get out of that pinch when you really need it. Dave is the banking app that can help get you up to $500 instantly with extra cash. That's more money to fill your tank, buy a wedding gift, or catch up on bills. And you can finally tackle those expenses that's been stressing you out without any hangups. There's no interest, no credit check needed. Millions of people have already downloaded the Dave app to get the financial relief they need with extra cash. So if you're in a pinch and need some extra help, download Dave and think of it as a helping hand for future you. So this is what you're going to do. Like I said, go to the App Store, Google Play, I think it's called on Android. That's D-A-V-E, like my name. Sign up for extra cash account and get up to $500 instantly. For terms and conditions, go to dave.com/legal. Instant transfer fees apply. Banking provided by Evolve, which is a member of the FDIC. Ed, what does FDIC stand for?
Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Thank you. That's what I was going to say until Carl Carl beat me.
That's right. So that's Dave.com. Go get that bread if you need it and you're struggling.
Man.
Like all these pores around me.
That's good timing. What else? Chief, you were out. When we want to get to this interview, we should tease it, right?
Or
were
you we could do that. We, you know, there's nothing going on.
Have to run it now. We can tease it.
Oh, yeah. We had Kevin Dineen. So, mostly known for being Eddie's swing coach. And then he was the head coach or assistant coach of the Blackhawks when they won the Cup in 15. He was there at the end. Saw things go from shit, you know, when they got rid of him in 18. And now he's with the Devils. So, really good insight on you know, the way the league's going, young players today, coaching women versus coaching men, because he won the Olympic gold medal in Sochi with the Canadian women's team. And he's becoming just one of my favorite people. Like, he's just good people. Eddie loves him too. It's just like we. I'd like to make him a recurring guest or make it a recurring bit where Eddie tries to FaceTime and he just doesn't pick up. So Deneen's the man, and it was a good interview.
Yeah, he's great. I'm sad I missed his call this time, but he missed mine the other day. So we're just
you're even.
Yeah, we're even. But I would love to talk to him soon because he's a great guy, and he was helpful to my golf game. He was a very nice guy.
He invited us out to his place in Saratoga. If you want to do that,
oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know what he did for me, Carl? When we were in the scramble, he has a great scoop and score, and he would just scoop everything. He just knew how to make it work. So.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
We like guys like that. While we're on the subject of golf, we're going to get to this Kevin Deneen interview, but on Sunday, I went out with Nick Hardy and got to play his home course with his dad and his best friend. Nick Hardy is the Chicago kid on the PGA Tour, and he's ranked like 126th in the world or something. He finished 14th at the U.S. Open, just had a top 10 at the Travelers. And a lot of golf like insiders and stuff have him as like a rising American star that should very much, provided no injuries, in the long run.
Is this be like the Barstool Bar?
Major contention. Yeah, he was hanging out this at the Barstool Bar. Yeah,
good night. Nice kid.
Yes, great kid. And so he was like, hey, I'm heading down to start the professional season. I'm going to play a couple rounds this weekend. If you're around on Sunday, come out. It'll be my last time. So I go out. I play with him and his dad and his best friend from high school. It was easy because both kids were named Nick. Super easy. And you got to love a dad who, like, instantly you're like, hey, Mr. Hardy, nice to meet you. He's like, John, come on.
What's up? Guys,
so
like
just
that.
An unbelievably warm environment. And
what's it like playing with someone that good?
Yeah, thank you, Dave, because I'm telling you guys, of all the shit, this is going to sound douchey, but trust me, I fucking mean it. Of all the shit that we've had exposure to, sitting in the basement interviewing Lucas Giolito when the podcast wasn't that big was crazy to me. Or going to see Whit Merrifield in the basement when the podcast was very small. Is major moments or like getting up early in the morning. I remember one Saturday, Dave and I did an interview with Len Casper, but he was like, it has to be at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, he was in Pittsburgh.
Because I'm traveling and that's the only time I can give you guys. And Dave and I were like, yeah, we'll do it. And that, there's these little moments where you're like, man, that was amazing or that's really cool. And I can just keep going down the list where you're like, man, I can't believe that because of Barstool, I got to do this or that. And then so going out and playing golf with Nick Hardy was just absolutely crushed, like basically almost every one of those experiences. There's a couple that are still, but it was such an amazing thing that I like had to keep reminding myself that like play it cool, be normal, like this isn't a big deal because I like golf a lot and he's quite literally like the best golfer to come out of Chicago.
What's his hometown?
Northbrook.
Okay.
It'd be so interesting to play golf with someone who it like actually matters. Like, you know, if you're playing with your buddy and he's mad about his chip and it's like, well it doesn't matter.
Why do you care?
People, this is like this guy like fuck, like I need to get better at these chips.
And so he spent 3 hours practicing before practice when we got done. He would get frustrated on the course if a putt lipped out that he thought he definitely should make, but he's got like a 5 second rule. So it's like, God damn, what the And then he's like totally cool and calm about it. But he brought that up. He's like, do you get mad? And I said, sometimes I get mad if we're playing for money or, you know, if it's a really big shot, I put pressure on myself. Like, I absolutely will get mad. Not throw clubs or anything, but I'll get. And he's like, damn, dude. He's like, you literally have to play 6 times a week. You have to be hitting balls for an hour a day, 6 times a week to actually really earn the right to be upset at all in a golf course. Because he's like, otherwise, it's the fucking best activity. You're out here hanging out with your friends, competing,
smoking,
like have a drink.
So
we didn't. And it was cool because it was literally the only round of the year where I didn't drink, like on the course. There's no booze, there's no music, nobody's smoking. It was just like, you're just out there to like, tell me about the hole. What should we do? What's the right way to go about this? We played it from the tips, 7,300 yards, which is the longest golf course I've ever played. And he's driver fucking sand wedge in every par four, meaning he's hitting his drives 330, 340 yards, hitting shots that I hit 90 yards, he hits 125. With significant more accuracy. Mm-hmm. So, and you can't do, it's not like I can get fucking, we can't go get Michael Kopech to pitch to us.
Right, exactly.
I can't put on pads and get run over by somebody or maybe. I guess if
that's
we
why
really
I
wanted,
that, yeah.
you know, fucking Max Strus to dunk on me or Chief or something, he'd probably do it. Maybe.
I'd take the charge.
If it was scramble style, would you have taken any of your drives?
Maybe the first hole because I was one, but no, because he ended up birding it, but I was just dead center in the fairway. I hit like a 270-yard drive on the first tee. Well, that's a nice feeling. He ran out. It was the best drive I had of the day. And this always happens. They're like, oh, what's your handicap? You're like, it's way higher. It's 15, but you, I'm going to par the first two holes, and you guys are going to think that I'm better. I'm not a sandbagger. Trust me. I shot 44 on the front, and I shot like 50 on the back. I picked up the ball on one of the holes because it was so embarrassing. But
I don't think so.
He was super cool, and I did feel this part where, like, you know how NASCAR drivers, like, NASCAR fans, like, have a driver? And, like, how? Or, like, even when you were a kid wrestling, like, why was I obsessed with Stone Cold Steve Austin, all that stuff?
Yeah.
And the PGA Tour is not anything I've been able to get really locked in on somebody. Really? Like, oh, I want to follow this guy, or I care about that guy's career. And so I'm actually pretty really pumped. I'm pumped to watch him stream his shit this weekend and just follow his fucking career.
Yeah, be sweet. I'm in on him. He was a great guy. His sister was very nice. His whole family was nice. So I'm in.
Well, Shout out to Nick Hardy. Thank you for bringing me out to the Merit Club. Although I will say at the end, I was like, maybe I should just stop playing golf because the tips he gave me on 17. He's like, do you want a tip to help how you swing now? Or do you want tips on how to be a good golfer? I was like, damn.
You can't change how you are now.
Oh, yeah, you can. That's absolutely what's on the fucking docket, man. Got to swing more outside in, drop it, load, get a better weight transfer. Weight's too much on the outside of my hip.
Open invitation for Nick to join me at the at Edgebrook on the mats. Did you see that?
Oh, tell me about that, please.
Yeah, so Edgebrook, it's a forest preserve. It's a forest preserve golf course, and they have mats.
Thank God for this show because we can talk about Edgebrook golf on this show.
Yes,
we can talk about this golf course on this show without feeling guilty that we're pulling away from a national audience. Why were you there?
My buddy just asked me to golf. I was like, "You're fine."
It's been a while.
My second round of the year, second round of the summer.
Not including the Open or Classic, rather.
No, but we didn't play. Yeah, we didn't play. Yeah. I played another round for my grammar school's golf outing in like June. But yeah, so I played, and it is. I mean,
did you run into anybody there?
Cigars?
I did not actually this time around. I have at that place.
Did you guys hear Ed and I ran into each other this last week?
Oh, yeah,
I did hear that.
Oh, I told you. Yeah. You could tell the story.
I was coming out of. I had left Swedish House Mafia Friday or Saturday night, and we went to the West Loop. We went to PB&J, and out of the corner of my eye, I'm like with my friends at like a bunch of picnic tables.
What time is this at, by the way?
One something, and I see the corner of my eye. I see a Bridgeport Bomber shirt in a very similar White Sox Dave build. And I lit up like it was a fucking Christmas tree. I was like, oh, this is perfect. And I just went up to him. My grandmother said, I was like, what the fuck are you doing around your pussy? And like White Sox Dave was like ready to fight. And like the people he was with were like, oh my God, like I thought you were serious. It was just perfect. Like I had like the perfect angle pursuit on him too. Like it was like he was walking out and it was just like, I just lit him up perfectly.
What if he turned around and just gave you one swift one to the stomach just out of instinct and reaction?
I would have been
prepared for that.
Fight or flight.
I wasn't prepared because I was fucked up myself.
Okay. Yeah, I was fucked up. If I was like a little more sober, I probably would have turned around. Like, because he like shoved me and it sounded like someone is like,
yeah.
My first thought was it was like in the first time in my life in actual stoolie that doesn't like me on the internet was like confronting me in public because. People say shit on the internet all day. I've never had someone walk up to me like, you're a fucking loser.
Yeah, like you said.
Turtles?
You
should be fired.
Turtles, too. Yeah.
That was a little different.
Yeah. Like you always say, if someone says shit, you always tell them, meet you at Declan's, you'll put your hands under the table.
They never do.
They get the first shot.
Yeah, they never
do. You thought someone was cashing that ticket. It so happened to be me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow, Ed. So you were, let me get this straight.
It was pretty funny.
It was your first Swedish House Mafia concert. Will it be your last? Sounds like you had a good time if you're at PB&J, fucked up at the picnic tables.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, summer's running out. So I was just trying to have a good time. And, you know, it was a good spot. It was.
I met a guy at Lala and we're talking. He was part of a bigger, you know, group of people, so to say, and you know, it's like, oh, what do you do? I work for Barstool. He's like, I work at the United Center. What do you do? He's like, yeah, you know, some would say I got my hand in how things operate around there. You know, so we're telling him like, oh, dude, I'm going to this and that. I had a couple concerts here. I'm just asking him questions about, and this is an older classic, like our dad's age Chicago type guy. And he's like, hey, young guy like you, you might be interested in this. He's like, we got Swedish House Mafia come back. He's like, I know this sounds crazy. He's like, literally 10 years they played ago, to this day, best show we've ever hosted. And he was going on and on about
really?
It. But I wanted you to go before I shared this because he's, I don't even know if this guy's like, you can't find this guy on a website. I'm not going to say his name, but
he
was saying, he was like, if you could pick one thing this summer, because I was telling him, man, Rage Against the Machine was awesome. He was like, dude, that was cool. If you really want to party hard, you really want to have a good time. He's like, this place turns inside out for Swedish House. Is that true?
I'm sure.
I honestly, Tom, you might be able to give a better a better review than me.
Yeah, I was there.
Would you agree with that?
That what?
Like that? Did you really enjoy it?
Yeah, I think it was probably like my favorite show I've ever seen in my life.
Whoa,
holy Tom!
I feel that's like an
Tom's
asshole.
Tom saying that would be the equivalent of Chief being maybe not Chief saying hockey or me Dave saying baseball, but it's pretty fucking close. Tommy musician
yeah.
over here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
wow,
that's fucking Swedish House Mafia. Saying a lot.
Like just the nostalgia factor for me. That was like 10 years in the making for me. I never got to see him. Like they're like the reason I fell in love with that genre. They're like huge titans of the industry. They're really important. It's music like I've heard for the past 10 years. Like their come up like coincided with my like going to college. Like my freshman year was 2011, so like my memories and like everything about growing up during that time is like so like ingrained with Swedish House Mafia. And
wow,
I got friends that are just
big
massive.
Huge, shout out Dante Sebastian. Like Dante hooked that up for me. Love him.
Damn,
was on the floor.
I saw Cascade at Sox Park on Friday. That was fucking awesome. But they should do that every single fucking Friday.
It looked
entire summer.
I'm not saying
that. But that's why I said it's my favorite, you know? Like, favorite's different than, oh, it's the best. Like,
yeah.
Personal favorite. Like, I was just happy the whole time. I left that, like, I've never
is
left
there a
the
reason
show
for
so
that
happy.
Happiness outside of the...
I mean, geez, Dave.
Yeah, the Miller Lights I drank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There what about you go. Some three cheese?
Yeah.
You know, but I was going to say, it's not. I had fun too. I just want to make that clear. But I had a drink deal, and my thing was I've just come to realize if you have an all you can drink deal, it's impossible not to have fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's impossible.
So long as you're not a fucking loser.
I tried. I called Eddie when I was down there waiting for them to come on.
Yeah, he shined the phone light, and I just point number.
It was all great vibes down there. I was like on the phone, like trying to like yell, like, dude, I'm the only one waving in the crowd. How do you not see me? And you were like, you just couldn't see me. And this guy in front of me was like, do you want me to hold a flashlight up? I'm like, yeah, thanks, man. And he like held a flashlight up for me, like some guy I don't even know was like he could see I was trying to like find my friend. So
I saw him. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a great moment.
Came a point.
It's a great moment for the boys. I'm a little disappointed I waited this long to get that. Little disappointed
to hear that.
Yeah, dude, that's fucking sweet.
Eddie had a whole Swedish House Mafia podcast. He didn't even ask me to. You didn't ask.
I didn't, dude. That's not true. It was not a whole Swedish House Mafia. It was.
I think
piece.
The title of it was like Swedish House Mafia recap.
I'm not the clickbait guy.
Okay.
You, Danny, and Hannah sat down did Swedish House Mafia.
I'm not the
when
clickbait
I'm
guy.
Like, and you knew that was like my big.
It was more so just a weekend recap. And I just got.
Do you have a nice weekend, Tom? You want to do that now?
This is fucked up. Now I feel bad.
I got the boot.
I'm glad we got to talk about it here for Tom.
I've had a whirlwind of a weekend. I just got back from New York and, you know, for the Surviving Barstool show and shit. So it's been a lot. So
yeah, you've been on the go.
Yeah.
And I've been before. It was like going back to the Elton John concert.
Yeah. It's been a wild fucking 10 days. So it's good to be back.
I drove out to the Field of Dreams game alone.
Oh, that's right.
My buddy. Family friend. Friends with the kid and with the
dad. I was with them last night.
Yeah, shout out to the Stillman family. Yep. They're great. Their family got involved with the Field of Dreams in 2012, and then they just sold their interest to like Frank Thomas and these developers to build up and really build it up so that it's an annual site. So I think MLB's taking next year off, and they're going to come back in 2024, and it should be like an annual thing. It's sick. People who complain about the parking lot situation and stuff, like it's just like, what do you expect?
You're in the middle of a fucking cornfield.
Like. Honestly, like they're doing the best they can, and even then, it wasn't horrible. But any questions about a Field of Dreams game? I don't want to go too long on any of that experience. It was very nice. I wish I was.
What'd you drop? Oh, you got.
Okay. I wish I was with the loved one. That would have been nice. Whether you know, whether it was my mom or dad or brothers or my wife or somebody that I really that in no disrespect to my wife, but it would have been better to somebody that. You know, loves baseball too.
Yeah, yeah.
because it's one of those things. But
well, you went last summer too, right?
I went, Dave and I went and played, but then we left the day before they actually played the game because we went out to do the promotion. And
well, how much more special would it have been if like it was a Cubs team you gave a fuck about?
I think that played a lot. I didn't give a fuck. I didn't watch the game really.
It's really got to be two good teams.
Yeah.
It couldn't just be like the Cubs playing, because the Cubs played in Williamsport a couple years ago against the Pirates when they were trash. And I had to be reminded of that.
You just reminded me now.
I was like, oh, I forgot. I forgot about that. That was fucking awkward. I'm trying to think. You know what was cool? Probably the coolest thing about all it. I got a guy, if you're ever interested, Ed, for a dog walk. He was the most fascinating guy. And I don't know if you guys saw, but like I got on the TV broadcast.
Yes, I did see that.
I made the guys who broadcast for Fox also broadcast for the College World Series.
Oh, no.
So there's a little network of guys that are like, hey, are you here? Let's go out. Let's have some fun. And so I went out and met up with a couple of the broadcasters and the people that work on that team and like cut to this and the show me camera too. And
it's one hard
of the,
job.
One of the guys in the group is the like head sports camera guy in like the world. And he works World Series, Super Bowl, Final Four, and whatever he wants. Every Mets home game he wants, every Yankees home game he wants. 59 years old. I'm like, have you ever made a mistake? He's like, I've never missed a pitch. And I'm like, what camera do you use? He's like, the most technical one. So when they zoom, if they've ever zoomed in on a pitcher over the last 25 years in a World Series, in any type of slow motion capacity, to be like, you can see it out of his hand here. He's like, that's me. And he has insane, I mean, like crazy insane stories about being locker room and guys and all stuff. So it was cool after they had shot it to be out with a group of guys that had up to, I think between the group of them had over 50 years of World Series between them.
That is.
Working cameras and shit.
Wow.
So that was a nice little trip, but I also understand Chief took a nice little trip himself, and that's where the interview comes from. So before, I guess to give some context to the interview, do we want to sponsor this segment? Is this for anybody?
We absolutely do.
Yeah, let's give this one to Skrill. Skrill, I mean, we said this before, but gambling season for me starts now. A little soccer, college football right around the corner. Skrill is the best digital wallet for gamblers because it was built for gamblers. Sophisticated gamblers use it to manage their bankroll, whether they're playing games like poker or betting on their favorite sports. They manage their bankroll using the wallet, which allows them to pay instantly and securely. It's payments without limits, basically. So that's obviously like a big upgrade. You can access your bankroll with instant deposits and instant withdrawals and also draw cash using your prepaid card. So let's just say Skrill is the best digital wallet for sports bettors, and it's a no-brainer for you to create your free account right this instant. You should do it. Preseason football is here. Notre Dame plays Ohio State, I believe, September 3rd. That's the first big football game of the year. You want to get familiar with that wallet before the football season starts, so make sure you sign up at skrill.com/barstool to create your free account and complete account verification by clicking follow the game after registering so you can start using their digital wallet today. So Skrill is where it's at for this fall.
Check out Skrill. I heard a rumor, Chief, about you. So you go out to this, you go out for the weekend.
Yep.
And our guy Danny Lance on the ones and twos over here travels with you. And you got fucking big leagued on the airplane? Was Danny sitting there with legroom and economy?
Oh, yeah.
Getting fucking cocktails
he
and stuff?
He was in like business class. And I was like, you know, kind of luck of the draw when you get those tickets. But Danny's like, he's like, oh, where are you sitting? I'm like, I don't know, the ass of the plane in the middle seat, like I normally do, seat 29, row, you know, seat B. And Danny's like, oh, well, I'm in row 12. I think it's business class. I'm like, what? didn't the person book our flight like together, like on the same one? Oh, no, I don't know. And he just like, so that was one of the most infuriating things ever when you have to walk by somebody on your, you know, that you know that you booked the flight basically together. And they've been seated for 20 minutes. They look comfortable, and I'm just like schlubbing luggage to the back of the plane with all the other fucking idiots in the back. That was me. And Danny was just all nice and comfortable. And then I like did not want to see him getting off the plane. I was like, I hope he just goes straight to baggage. Like I don't want to fucking look at him. There he was, his big stupid face waiting right at the end of the gate. So yeah. So other than that, it was a great trip, and it was great to see Danine again. And yeah, I feel like I probably shaved 10 strokes off my game this weekend and had a great time. And why don't we just throw it to Danine now?
Whoosh.
All right, we're in the interview portion of today's show. We're coming to you live from Simsbury, Connecticut. We're here with former Blackhawks assistant coach, NHL lifer Kevin Dineen. Yeah. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Chief. Good to be here.
And Eddie's swing coach.
Yeah, it is. Hey, I took a little heat from Eddie there a couple weeks ago. Holy smokes. Yep.
You don't answer Eddie's phone calls. You're on the shit list.
Yeah. And I was officially told that by my kids when they saw he put something, he posted something there. So my bad, Eddie. Hey, I did call you there a couple days ago. He did not pick
so
up.
So you're even.
He didn't even text me back either. Wow. So, you know, it's one and one.
So he's not here this weekend. That's
right.
I think he's negative.
That's
so
right.
Now he owes you an apology. Just topsy-turvy the whole thing.
And you missed a good one, big boy.
Yeah. So tell us why we're here. We're here in Connecticut. We're doing the Connor Zeke Foundation Charity Golf Tournament. This is my second year here. Tell us a little bit about that organization and what we're doing.
Well, it's my fourth year here, and the Zeke family has been dear friends of mine. Liz, I've known her since almost she was in high school, and I was a brand new whaler at the time, a rookie player. So we're starting to date ourselves a little bit. But when you know people that long and get to know the family, and then all of a sudden they're struck by a tragedy with Connor's passing a number of years ago. You know, you turn something like that into a positive, and the work that they've done here in the Connecticut area and the turnout for this golf tournament is just incredible. You can attest to that.
It is the party of the summer, I would say. It was a great time, great cause.
Yeah.
You know, people fly in from all over. And a great group. We're thrilled to be invited. So my line is, I'll come as long as I'm invited.
Well,
so,
the cool thing is that you do make the effort, and that's what I see is so many people, like you say, just get on a plane. Ulfie Samuelson did that yesterday.
Yep.
Surprise show up here. We didn't know he was coming. Yep. Neither did the Zeke. So we played. I like to say we cheated, but we were a fivesome, but we only took four shots a hole. So we
you guys were moving quick. You were one ahead of us. So we're going to be behind these guys all day long.
Yeah.
It's funny you brought up Ulf. That guy, when I was a little kid, watching, you know, I remember him more in the Penguins than the Whalers.
Yeah, sure.
Terrified of him. He was like the scariest dude ever. What was he like as a teammate and as a player? Because I think he's one of those guys that has like this, at least in my head, like a villain rap. Like he's...
Yeah, deserved.
Yeah.
And he's still kids about that kind of stuff. I remember our first training camp, we were both rookies. Came in the exact same year. We were drafted the same time. I was a third round pick. He was a fourth. I'll just make sure you know that part of it. But my dad was a scout, so that kind of I might get held against me on the other side.
True.
But you know, used to players from Sweden have a high level of skill. They're known for their you know, hockey sense, that kind of thing. What they really weren't known for was this nasty edge. And Ulfie was a guy that came over here. This rookie kid from Sweden in training camp, and he's out there and he's just running everybody. He's running me. So I gave him a good whack literally right across because he was the only guy with a shield at that time. And I took him my stick and I had a black mark right across here. And he just looked at me like, all right. So I got a little space from him from there. But
so you just had to challenge him a little bit.
Yeah. But you know,
he seems like a guy who is supposed to be born in like Red Deer.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, he is a competitive guy and just plays the game extremely hard. So, you know, it's always you get teammates like that just play the right way, and those are the guys you end up winning with.
What do you think it was about that Whalers team that put so many guys as coaches? You've coached, been a head coach in the NHL, head coach in the AHL now.
Yeah.
Ronnie Francis, Joel Quenneville, obviously. Ulf was an assistant coach.
Right.
Who was your coach?
And
was
Dean Evason. It just keeps going on and on. John Anderson. You know, if you looked outside, if we went for a little walk outside, it's a sleepy little area. Okay. I mean, it's spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, the scenery, but a little bit of farmland,
Than Chicago.
Yes, it really is. And you always wonder about that. What if I was drafted a pick later? You know, I could have ended up in New York or St. Louis, Chicago, L.A.
Yeah.
You could have ended up anywhere. And we ended up in Hartford. And I think that is partly by luck, but part of it was by design. You know, our general manager at the time was looking for a certain type of player, and I think we had a group that played the game the right, and I think we thought the game a little bit as well.
Yeah.
So You know, we were the kind of team that might not have been the most talented, but we played the game the right way and played the game hard. And it's amazing to watch, whether it's Mike Liutz that's gone on to be an agent, or like I say, Dean Evason that's been an excellent coach in the L. Ray Ferraro is a, a broadcaster of great renown. So, you know, you get that kind of a mix, and it's really fun to stay in touch with these guys and to follow their careers.
Good network.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
And then, is that something that you as a coach, that you can pick out a guy and be like, oh, he could have played with us, he thinks the game the right way? Or how do you like identify that or cultivate that?
That's a, you know, that's a unique ability. And that's why, hey, can you imagine being a scout and trying to pick that out in an 18-year-old kid? I mean, that's a tough. And a 17-year-old kid, and, you know, there's just so much growth. And, you know, all of a sudden you have kids that age and you realize that they're knuckleheads as well, right? But that's part of the fun. And that's really where the juice is for me coaching in the American League, is seeing these kids and watch them develop and, you know, start my career with a Ryan Getzlaff and a Corey Perry, and all of a sudden they're wrapping up their NHL careers, and to see how they've evolved from just, you know, young kids that make a lot of knucklehead mistakes, and now all of a sudden they become Stanley Cup champions, great leaders,
Hall of Famers,
fathers, you know, all those things that you just kind of go, hey, pretty cool to watch. Yeah. So, you know, that's the fun part of the game, is getting to know people and staying in touch.
There's kind of a narrative out there that, like, the kids coming through today are just a lot different than they were even 15 years ago. Do you see that too? You have to change the way your approach.
Yeah, you do. You have to. Your communication skills have to. There's more information to give, right?
Yeah.
Because
you got to give it while that's playing it. Fortnite and things like that.
Exactly. A lot of tool, a video, that kind of thing, and. You know, I mean, I coach women. I coached at the Olympics, and I always tell that kind of story. It's like, hey, with women, you gotta, you know, there has to be an extra explanation. You know, incredibly competitive, talented. One of the best experiences of my life.
You want to show off the show off the tattoo?
Yeah, I got the tattoo rocking. Which side? I don't even know which side.
The other side. That was Sochi, right?
That was a challenge from them that if we won the gold medal, the old man would get a tattoo. So I went ahead and did that. But
what did your kids say about that?
Oh, they loved it. Yeah. They loved it. You know, kind of opened a green light. We haven't got any tattoos amongst the kids so far. So that's a good thing.
Just dad.
No, it's, you know, I always, but I did. I mean, like, you know, I used to kind of use the example for a guy. You just kind of, hey, you know what, John, get your head out of your ass, right?
And
it's like, but with a girl, you go, hey, you got to get your head out of your ass, because when you got your head in your ass, now you can't see the play. Now you don't know what's going on out there. So get your head up,
right?
And now you can see, right?
Yeah.
So there is a little difference there, and I think that's where the game's evolving. It's really got to be that communication. That's where you rely on your assistant coaches. And, you know, for me, I just I really enjoy – you know, specifically at the American League level, it doesn't matter if, you know, you're a trainer, a referee, a player, a coach. You know, that's kind of where you make your brain farts a little bit there, and stuff happens. And those things go on. And, you know, it's a great thing to be able to follow these guys. And some of them are going to get to the NHL.
Yep.
And that's fine. That's part of it. But you want them to kind of maximize their potential. You don't want to leave any chance for there to be, you know, what if or coulda shoulda somewhere down the line. So brutally honest is not a bad way to roll either. Let them know what you think, and never say something about a guy you really wouldn't say to him.
Okay. I think that's good, like, life advice.
Yeah.
Just say that about everything.
Yeah.
And then so at 14 was the Olympics, and then you come home, basically, or come back to the, you know, the States, and you step into the Hawks. So, like, what was that experience coming in 14? Like, they were a wagon at that point. So, were you like, holy shit, when you got here? Like, this team is like, we're ready to go right away?
Yeah. Well, they already were. And, you know, that machine is, you know, you look at the team and the way the team was built, and the little intangibles, the guys like Hammer and Kruger, and just those little areas of the game, Crow in net, you know, you just had – You know, and you got your rock stars that deserve
Scott Darling.
Yes.
Friend of the program. Well,
exactly. Yeah, you know, yeah. Darls comes in. You don't win a cup without Darls yep. there, right?
Cut
you
that. Get into,
yeah. yeah. Well, you know, in the Nashville series.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
You grow in the, you know, and then on the flip side, you know you're not going to win either without Crow coming back and, mm-hmm. and doing playing the way he plays. So, you know, things roll over the course of a season. You got to get lucky. But you could tell that was a really special group. It really was.
Yeah.
There was some great areas of the way they played. And, you know, and I give a lot of credit to Q because, boy, he knew how to manage those guys and put them in the place to succeed. And, you know, that is a one of those things. I think a lot of coaches, we always kind of give a lot of credit to the players, deservedly so. You know, I think you say, hey, without good players, you're, you know, just an okay coach. And that was certainly the case. But when you're able to push buttons and to find the matchups and put people in places, kind of like the Anaheim series in 15 was a incredible, incredible job of managing the way we had to play that team to win.
Yeah, can you explain that a little bit to people? Because that's one of those things that I think gets lost. You know, like everybody remembers that series.
Right.
You're down, is it 3-1?
Yeah.
3-1.
Yeah.
And,
I think it was, yeah.
And then it's just like something, and it was, there was that, right? It was like my favorite stat. I'll get it wrong, but it was like from 09 to 15, or maybe even into 16, that St. Louis series. Whereas games 4 through 7, yeah. the Hawks were like 47-2,
yeah.
something
yeah.
like that. So yeah. what was it about Joel, and what did he do specifically in that series that you're like, this guy?
Well, it was, you know, I think Kessler was, they were trying to get the Kessler-Taser matchup. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, right off the bat, Joel kept putting on Taze. And then he'd put out another line, then he'd put Taze out again. And then he put Taze out again. So we're 5 minutes into a game. Now, I coach Corey Perry and, mm-hmm. and Ryan Getzlaff. Those two are playing on the line together. They're sitting on the bench.
Because they just can't get them
out.
Yeah.
Can't get them out there. Because every time they didn't want Taze against Getzlaff. So kept on putting them out there. And I kind of looked over and I kind of caught Corey Perry's eyes. And he's kind of giving her this one. He's pissed, right? Because yeah. he's not getting on the ice. But... You know, that's what happens if you get stuck in your matchup and you really want that, then your guys don't get on the ice. Yeah. And I think
you look up, you know, and Corey Perry's got 3 minutes of ice
exactly.
time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's where Q always has that little bit of, I call it the hockey savant, man.
Yeah.
He's got a really good feel for the game. And I learned a heck of a lot, you know, in my time in Chicago, just the way they went about their business. And, you know, it's kind of neat, you know, Mike Gapsky or Troy Parchman. It's not just the coaching staff. It's not just the players. It's mm-hmm. a whole organization. A lot of good people that are still there and moving forward.
Now, another guy is a friend of the program, Sharpie. We had him out in Vegas for a tournament. And he, you know, skill guy, very competitive, kind of like you in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were out there and some guy, like, you know, it's a roller hockey tournament. Everyone's supposed to be having fun. Gave Sharpie a little push in the back when he's on wheels. He went into the boards, turned around, thought he was going to murder him. Like, Sharpie's like, I'm going to do that again and fucking kill you, was the quote to Sharpie. And the guy's like, ah, like, sorry.
Yeah.
Is that, like, another thing where it's like you wouldn't look at Sharp necessarily if you're not paying attention, watching for 10 years, that he has, like, that screw loose kind of thing. Is that something you can draw out of people, or are you just born with that?
Well, I think there's got to be that little snap in you to well, I shouldn't say that, because there's some guys that, you know, a guy like Sharpie was a lot more skilled than I was.
Yeah.
So he shot the puck, and but when you got that little bite to you, I think that does make a little difference, right? It might give you that little extra space that you might need, and you know, those are the, I don't know, the intangibles of the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's why it's fun. It's fun to talk hockey, right? You talk with fans, you talk with coaches. We have these kind of conversations mm-hmm. because, you know, there's just those little areas of the game and, that do make the difference at the end of the night. Might not be personally on the scoreboard, but it just adds up over the course of a year. You know, you look at Colorado this year, there's a lot of talk of all their guys that are highly skilled. But I think I talked to Jared Bednar at the draft, and you know, he really gave credit to like a Cogliano kid that just came in there that had a hunger and desire, been around the game a long time, not a big guy, but God, just played, you know, incredibly hard. Eric Johnson, the same idea.
Yeah. And they were close, and then it's like, you know, what we need is Josh Manson.
Yeah.
You know, like something like that, little different type of guy. Is there a guy when you're looking back at your run in Chicago where you're like, man, I loved coaching him?
Shazi is probably the guy, you know, for one that really sticks out. Just so much personality on and off the ice, and just high character, you know.
Yep.
The skill levels was sufficient, but just kind of a difference maker, and could be best buddies with just about anybody in the whole organization. Mm-hmm. So just the quiet confidence of Kaner, and to watch him from far, and then all of a sudden to be able to work with him. You know, I was able to run the power play there. So I did spend a lot of time with, you know, guys like Dunks and Sharpie and Taser. And that was, hey, that was pretty special for me. And two-way street, right? You're learning stuff from them. They're learning a little bit from you. And, you know, I love the emotion that these guys, I mean, you know, we get the bread man the next year.
Well, that's what was going
to
be my next
to
one.
Watch these two get at it. I mean, it was special. And I always laugh.
Have you seen anything like that? Like those two, like they just seem like they're soulmates in a way.
No. I've never seen it. I always tell the
Probably shouldn't have traded him.
The funniest story was, like, the two of them are there, right? Now, you got two guys, and they're playing together, and one is, you know, just here, doesn't speak very good English. But they would get on the bench, and they'd be next to each other, right? And the bread man would be fucking yelling at him in Russian, and Kaner would be yelling back at him, and they'd be going at it, right? Yeah. And then he'd be going, hey, Dino, fucking get this guy away from him, fucking kill him, right? And the bread would be giving it back to him, and then bread would grab a water bottle and squirt Kaner's skates, and then I thought Kaner was going to just explode, right? And the two of them would go at it, and then you'd see him after the game, right?
Yeah.
There they are over in the corner. They're, like, over there giggling like little schoolgirls. Yeah. Like, that's just... It was like an incredible bond. One guy's rookie of the year and one guy's
MVP.
MVP.
Yeah. Pretty cool. I feel like you should have got a watch out of that deal. Something running the forward. It's a power play.
Yeah, it was, it's neat to see that, you know, that just joy of the game.
Yeah.
Even though we're talking about players that are, you know, one of the best players ever to play, you know, in a city like Chicago. Now you've got a guy that's one of the highest recognizable hockey players in New York City. But to know that part of their success is their joy of the game, right? Just playing the game, like getting out there to practice. They wouldn't leave the ice at the end of practice. They wanted to practice one-timers. They wanted to practice little plays. And that kind of stuff, it's fun. They do little games with, you know, with a goalie, a three-puck game, whatever
still,
it is.
And warm-ups, be it like and when they're playing it against each other.
Right.
They still kind of like dick around and, you know, pass and try to have a contest. Who can leave the ice last before going in the locker room? So
it's,
that was a great two-year run.
Yeah.
Could you feel – so you came in 14. I think that 14 team was probably a little more talented than the 15 team that won. Just on like a little deeper on defense, like Roosevelt got hurt
in
that 15 year. So could you feel like going into training camp after, you know, the Jalmerson and Panarin trades that summer? Like,
right.
This is our job's got a lot harder.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's, you know, that's it. Hey, for me, Jamie Compan, I owe him a great deal of thanks. He took a job in junior hockey as felt he wanted to go the head coaching route, and a spot opened up. So this opportunity in Chicago was fabulous. And, you know, to have that team that was put together, a championship team, had already won two cups, and to get on board that thing. But I think that's always healthy when you bring in new blood, like an old goat like me that's just got such a strong desire to win a cup.
Yeah.
You know, been in the game a long time. That's pretty emotional stuff, I think. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're making trades based on having to manage the business side of it.
Yeah.
coaches.
That's a nice way to say it.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, and that is really it. Yeah. I mean, it is. It's a business, and you got to be able to crunch those kind of numbers. But as a coach, man, there's guys on your team. You just want those guys there because you know that they're the ones that help you win.
Yep.
And you also understand that as a player, kind of a business of one, right? Yeah. Like you're your own business. That's what you are. No, I'm a member of, you know, the New Jersey Devils, but no, you got to think about that from your own standpoint.
Yep.
And, very understandable, and I respect that. But it's hard to see guys when the chemistry is so incredible with the team, and then you got to fiddle with that to try to balance things out.
Yeah, and then looking into next year a little bit, so you're with the Devils AHL affiliate.
Right.
That feels like a team on the rise. Like they're like they got all these good, you know, young players.
Yeah.
Is there somebody that we should be like looking out for in the next year coming up through New Jersey?
Well, Alexander Holtz is probably the first guy. I had him for the most of last year. Fabian Zetterlund, the Swedish meatballs, I call these two. And they are so much fun. They play the game hard. I think both are going to have really I'm going to enjoy watching how their careers progress. I still think they're young, and there's still some growth there. But, you know, that was part of the attraction to the Devils because development and the youth movement that they have going on means,
and
like
it's close
I said,
to Saratoga.
And it's close to Saratoga and Lake George. So my lake's my life easy. Yeah. So it's a pretty good setup for sure. I great, passionate fans in Utica. You know, the town's trying that transition from that northern industrial town, trying to make that push, and that's always a challenge, but there's no denying that it's a really, really passionate fan base.
Great college hockey area.
And exactly. Yeah. We got a number of schools right in the area. I got to see my son play playing college hockey, so a lot of good things go with that. And, hey, like I say, you just you know, once you get in the rink, you come, you put your, you know, hours in there, and a little different message than when I was coaching in San Diego versus Utica. You guys can't. We didn't have any Stingray. Nobody stepped on a Stingray in Utica this year. Let's put it that way.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Watch out for Lyme disease. But other than that, you're probably fine. Right. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll wrap it up there.
Cool, man.
Yep, thanks so much for doing this.
Hey, thanks
for
having me.
Next year too.
Hey, thank you for the support in the golf tournament. I know you guys get it out there, and it's good stuff. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you too. Thanks a lot.
Now it's Kevin Dineen.
I got stoolies on a little.
Are we back in the show, or are you just talking?
Yeah, we're back. Just let's keep Dave going.
Yeah, we're back.
What do you got, Dave? Keep going. What's the investigation?
You guys can go. I got something.
No, never mind the Kevin. What do you got, Dave?
I might need to speak about something a little later, but you guys can talk hockey.
Speak about 3T first.
I'm high on it right now.
Okay.
Well, it is psychoactive.
It is.
So that's something for people to know. And now, with 3-Chi, you don't need to live in a recreational state to get your hands on Delta-9 THC. 3-Chi has federally legal dispensary-grade cannabis products that deliver straight to your door. We've taken advantage of those here. Choose from a wide variety of delicious edibles. That's my favorite. But they've got vapes. They got drink enhancers. They got everything you need. You like those little tinctures under the tongue to help you sleep at night? They got those too. So what are you waiting for? Go to 3chi.com for your exclusive discount code to save on premium THC products and experience cannabis perfected now. So get 5% off. 5% off is a lot. Go to 3chi premium products, and you'll do that by going to 3chi, that's the number 3chi.com, and use promo code STOOL5 to get that 5% off your order. You must be 21, and you know, be careful, it is psychoactive. It was another part of my plane ride that I really messed up this time. I didn't bring it with me on the flight like an idiot, so not only was I uncomfortable, I couldn't really sleep on the way out, and then I was just angry because Danny Lance was sitting having like the time of his life, probably had champagne in the front, and I didn't, and he brought 3-Chi and didn't offer me one. So we had all sorts of issues on the way out. Way back was better. And if you're flying, if you're doing anything, it's part of my nightly routine now, 3-Chi, just go to 3chi.com, and again, that promo code is STOOL5 for 5% off your order.
Good stuff. Good stuff. What else we got?
Is there any hockey or Bears?
I mean, look, I don't think we're going to have much hockey until, like, they signed Jack Johnson.
That's fine.
He's been around fucking forever. The World Junior is going on right now.
Nobody knows.
They're going to.
They're as big as their bubbly toes in the heart of a queen and a something and something. That Jack Johnson?
Yeah, just check out on the guest list.
Yeah, that exactly right. I couldn't figure out what you were doing there for a second. But no, Jack Johnson, who is high school teammates with Sidney Crosby, to give you an idea how old he is. He's probably 36 years old, about as old as me. And
about as old as you or as old as you?
I don't know if he was born on my birthday, so about as old. And, yeah, so look, it sucks. They're not going to have anything good for, you know, I'll talk to you guys in like 3 years. Okay? Unless Patrick King
is traded. You can make a public apology and get off the ban list and get on the White Sox bandwagon.
I think I'm off the list because the 108 guys took me off, and then you've invited me to the game every day this week. So I feel like that's a pretty good indication that I'm off the ban
list. No, you're not allowed to root for them.
I don't root for them.
Nagy back in town? Anybody?
Nah.
Yeah, I don't. I mean.
That's all sad.
Bears related, it's just like. The field's a pile of shit. We knew the field was a pile of shit. Mm-hmm. You would think that if
did you watch any of the preseason game?
Yeah.
I watched a little bit of the first series, second series.
I watched Fields until he got taken out. He looked good.
Yeah,
took
same.
One really bad sack, but.
Yeah, Schofield.
They're going to be so fucking bad, man.
Yeah, 70-1 to win the division.
You would think that like a city that's trying to keep him there would like maybe make the field like decent before the first game, but.
Well, you don't want to mess up your future tenants, the Chicago Fire. Yeah. Got to keep them happy.
Inept.
Yep.
7-1 to win the conference.
So you're saying you like that?
No. Oh, okay. I'm saying it's preposterous. 70-1.
That's basically saying that it's an impossibility.
170-1 to you know, win.
Crazy thing about the state of the field, too, was Red Hot Chili Peppers play Friday. Then Saturday's Bad Bunny. You a big Bad Bunny guy?
I'm not familiar.
And then there's one more concert, and it's Ramstein.
Ramstein, I really want
to
go to.
So legit too.
That
they're
field.
They're supposed to be so legit.
Once they play Du Hast, that field is never going to be there again.
No,
it's going to be like the fucking hole that Newman dug in fucking Space Jam for Jordan. This fucking field's done once Ramstein plays Du Hast. Soldier Field's never going to be the same. I mean, I don't even Justin feel like he might just have to take a year.
At what point is it an advantage to us then? Isn't that help the Bears the way they're set up this year? To have Du Hast, to play it hard, to rip it up?
No, Aaron Rodgers loves playing there because it makes the defense a step slower because it's so bad.
It's like they're playing in snow.
I know.
Yeah.
How long until someone fucking rolls an ankle on a little 3-inch divot and is out for the year?
Oh,
it's happening guaranteed. To someone
tonight,
on
Thursday night. They play tonight against the Seahawks. Tonight, is it at Seattle or is it at? Oh, it's at Seattle. Seattle. Never mind. It's not tonight. The next time they play at Soldier Field. My apologies.
I have a sinking feeling that we're forgetting something.
We didn't talk Cubs at all, which is probably fine.
Right. A little Field of Dreams game there.
Yeah.
There's not, I mean, like.
Oh, I got something. You've only seen the first part, but the Manti Te'o doc.
That's it, Ed. Yes, okay. That's it.
Yes,
because we talked before the show. So that was, I haven't watched it yet, but I heard that it is insane. The set that it's a little slow to get going, and then it takes off.
Yeah. So I finished the first episode, and that's when they get into the buildup of the timeline of it, I don't remember as well, but she fake died on like September 12th or something like that. And it didn't come out until basically right after like the Heisman Trophy presentation. So they're going through like the whole thing, like how could this happen? And it was like, I could see how it happened, especially back then. Now, falling in love with someone you've never met though, to the point that it's like ruining your life, you're dedicating the season to this person, that's calling her your girlfriend. Only a weirdo does that.
But it was also like a great situation for Manti Te'o because he was so busy with football and school that it was like, hey, it's not bad. I don't have a girlfriend here all the time.
Right. Somebody to talk to.
Yes. Yeah. But so. Never seeing her at all. Weird. Did you see it, Carl?
No.
No. I watched the second part this morning. Crazy, dude. Yeah. I mean, it's just like one of the craziest stories of our lifetime.
And one of those things that will never happen again.
No.
It's impossible. Now everyone's just too cynical, too skeptical. Everyone knows, like,
maybe, though, dude. It might happen again.
How?
I don't know. The way the world's going and with fucking the fucking metaverse and this deep fake shit.
Well, that's like, you never know. That's going to be the new real relationship is metaverse.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. Like, did you see? I was watching 60 Minutes the other day and they had like a Tom Cruise fake video.
I've seen that, yeah.
I mean, it was Tom Cruise.
Like, looks it was exactly him. Like him, yeah.
Like, what do you mean?
It's like a hologram, deep fake.
It was crazy, yeah,
it's
dude.
Very
it's
weird.
It's fucking creepy.
Yes.
Like, it scares me, honestly.
Fuck yeah, it's scary. That's why I'm saying, like, this thing is not, like, it can't happen again at some point.
Can
but
we,
at the end, I think it, like,
deep fake of Ed?
I would not approve to that. I would not.
How
consent.
Old do you think our the generation above us was when they realized that, like, the world was moving too fast for them? I feel like I'm 35 now, and the world, I know for a fact the world's moving too fast for me. I feel like that's pretty fucking early. I feel like if you go back.
What part's moving too fast?
I don't know. How about relationships on the metaverse, Chief?
Yeah, but you've got a real relationship.
How about Tom Cruise on the. I understand that.
Yeah.
I know. So that doesn't that mean. Like, I know that I am normal by traditional standards, but I'm saying the world is moving too fast. I won't catch up. And I realize that now at 35, where I think, like, my dad probably didn't realize that till he was like 50. And even then, when the internet came out, he probably still doesn't give a fuck.
My thing would be, like, you have to be trying to participate in that life and fail at it for it to be moving too fast.
Mm-hmm. I got
to
be Brooks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brooks Hadlin.
Yeah. Right. I don't think that's you.
Probably like after. Like a couple years after Facebook got popular, right?
I would say that
for the older generation,
exponential growth straight
yeah.
up.
But then that generation took it over. Like, I remember logging back on in like 2012, and it was all like, you know, all the
your aunts
all
and
the
uncles
arguing about Obama versus Romney. I'm like, you know what? I'm checking out of
it's
this.
It's almost like we just locked
forever.
Them in a room and just like threw the key away. Like, yeah, oh, you guys just go over here.
That's when I think it started to turn. Because when at first Facebook first got, he's like, oh, this
sweet.
Is sick.
It was awesome.
Fucking right on my wall, dude. Please.
Yeah, like, it was great.
It was huge.
Who's she dating?
Yeah, exactly.
Pull it up.
Relationship.
Yeah.
But it was, it makes you feel bad for Manti Te'o. I'm the only one that's seen it, so I guess I'll say it unless you guys don't want to say anything.
I felt bad for
him. And the last speech he has in the whole doc is pretty inspiring. Like, if you feel bad now, I don't know how you could watch that last 3 minutes, like his monologue, and not like feel terrible.
Yeah.
Like, how many people, he's like, dude, there were so many people that I thought were like fans of mine, and I'd take pictures of them, and then I'd see them post a picture later and just, like, say how, like, just make a joke about me and, like, how I was, like, the fake girlfriend or something. So it was
tough. Yeah, I was watching that, and I'm, like, because we live on the internet, and we've all embarrassed ourselves to one degree or another. It doesn't, some more than others. But but that has to just be like the most embarrassing because like he did like the Tom Rinaldi interviews and like the whole thing, and it's just like
it's cringeworthy.
Any young guy
to
in that age, that's that fucking age, man.
Where
like,
your
it
friends
really
are ruthless.
Ruins you. Yeah.
Well, he's
like if that
have...
happened to one of my boys in college, I would have grilled him.
See,
until...
I feel like that's different though. Like that's like your buddies. Like it comes from like a
not
deep down
entire
of, like, a
world.
Good place, and they interviewed Robbie Toma, who was a wide receiver for Notre Dame. You know, basically got in because he's Manti's friend. And he was interviewed a lot in that doc. And it was just like, you could tell, like, he thought, like, his alarm bells were going off in his head a little bit. And it's just like, this is, you just, I don't know. It's impossible just to, like, sit there and look at a 22-year-old kid giving this speech to Tom Rinaldi and, like, seemingly trying to do the right thing and just being a fucking idiot.
Yeah, but the crazy part of it all is, do you think Manti Te'o is still a remembered name right now? Of course he was a finalist, but people argue that all of his off the field stuff helped him get in that position. I don't really know. I don't remember that season much.
He went undefeated, and he was like, I remember it vividly.
He was great.
That was the first year of the undefeated block. And then they went undefeated.
That's five-star Hawaiian linebacker going to Notre Dame. I mean, that guy came in freshman year. You were like, dude, this guy's so good. They brought him in from Hawaii.
And I remember he was good. He played his freshman year. He was good. But that year, it was like every single big play that they needed, he made. So like they're playing, you know, Michigan State. He gets an interception. He's a forced fumble. That was like the thing that was missing, and he became like a turnover machine.
Yeah.
And then he had a big interception against SC, and like that was what big one against Oklahoma. That was their big win on the road that year. They beat Oklahoma on the road. Like, he was a force. Mm-hmm. And I think the extra stuff, like, sure, probably, like, put his name out there a little bit more, but he was already a star. Like, he was supposed to leave after his junior year and came back. So
definitely a star, but the off the field, like,
yeah,
grandma dying, line. Girlfriend dying, like, adds to it a lot. Yeah. So. It was a crazy story. I mean,
okay, so outsider, not a Notre Dame fan, like somebody who, it's one of those stories too where you're like, yeah, classic Notre Dame kid. I mean, that kind of added to it. Like, you're not going to see that happen a lot.
Why
like,
is he a classic Notre Dame kid?
Because it's like, yeah, of course you got.
Yeah, it was.
Of course the Notre Dame kid, it's like he's nerdy. Like, that wouldn't happen to the, you know, that's not happening to the quarterback at USC. And that's not, certainly not going to happen to, like, don't make me go down and list all these examples. You know what I'm getting at? It's the Notre Dame kid. You know, they live in dorms all their.
I suppose. My thing was just, like, and they made a thing about this in the doc about how he's, like, the anti-Notre Dame kid. Like, they'd never had a Mormon, Samoan, five-star Hawaiian guy in there before. And it was, like, part of it, like, they build it up as if his isolation because of his cultural differences and like the culture shock he experienced at Notre Dame put him in a position to like go down this path with Lane Kakua.
But the good part is like he will have a redemption arc now because people realize that he was not in on it and he legitimately just did get fucking deepfaked and deepfaked for that era for sure.
100%. And it was, you know, I could see it. I could see how that, like, they make it seem like, you know, he was a victim in that. And it was just like, I don't know. I feel bad for a guy. And I, like, Portnoy put out a tweet today being like, hey, I'm sorry about those t-shirts we sold back in 2012.
Yeah. What was but, like, it was like Kakua t-shirts or something?
Well, it was play like your fake dead girlfriend died today or something. And, you know, so, but it's like your absolute most embarrassing moment. It's just like you can never live it down.
And I saw Katie Stats tweet too about, she's like, well, like a couple thoughts, like if this happened again, unfortunately the reaction is still the same because people just love to get the jokes and the memes off, and that's just a fact as well.
I also think that you were saying it was like so classic Notre Dame. I think if that exact same thing happened at a kid from Wisconsin, it's just not a story. It's like it like goes up and dies like quickly.
Yeah, because everyone like you know, Notre Dame fans like they're a little holier than thou, and people
totally
are, like, undefeated. Yeah. Like, yo, did you hear about our guy? Like, he's doing this and that.
Well, and that was definitely part of it too. Where and like they got smoked by Alabama that year, but that was part of the thing where it was like that was the first. It was like Notre Dame's irrelevant. That's what the narrative was back then, and then it's all of a sudden they're undefeated. They have a Heisman finalist. They're no longer irrelevant. So all the haters were like so they were drinking it in because it gave them a cudgel to hit Notre Dame with because they couldn't do the irrelevant and you suck anymore because they beat Oklahoma and Norman and they won 12-0.
Yeah.
So it was like the perfect thing for everybody who hates Notre Dame to hit Notre Dame with that year.
For you know, because everyone has their taunts at certain schools. And like, you know, for Michigan for a while, I was like, how do you get a Michigan to choke? You put them in a big bowl, you know? And it was just whatever. And that was, you know, same insults to Notre Dame fans. Rudy was offsides, and Manti Te'o had a fake girlfriend.
Yeah,
you know, it's
and that'll be it.
It's like the perfect.
And it does like it. He should. He's not like when you think of like great players, great Notre Dame players of my lifetime. He's not brought up, you know, even with Notre Dame fans, and he was just finished second in the Heisman.
He was so. I wanted the Bears to draft him so bad.
Well, he ended up on the Bears practice squad, so we got our wish. Yeah. But. Yeah. But, you know, it's like Brady Quinn, it's Jeff Samardzija, it's like even Jimmy Clausen, who had way less success, Golden Tate, and then you don't really, it's just like we don't, no one talks about Manti because it's like an embarrassing thing. Yeah. So
I think that'll change, though.
I hope think so. He was I hope so.
Redemption. So that's my thoughts.
Yeah. And we had the producers on Dog Walk last week, so go check that out.
Yeah. Go listen to that.
Thank you.
Go listen to that. That's it. Cup stuff, it. Nothing. No.
Nothing.
Go sign Trey Turner next year or something.
All gas?
No breaks?
DJ, play that shit.